you could take the entire DMR IDs and load them into the latest greatest high memory capacity Anytone HTs. They're orders of magnitude better than Valfunks. They're not comparable. You don't pay extra margin like you do for Kenwoods or ICOMs, but I find them to be very well made, and like I said, I own two of them.
QSO, yeah, I like them too. It would be the next step from Baofeng to Anytone, and you can program it with the Anytone software. Just need a Windows computer. And also you can program them manually, which is a really good feature. With my MD380, you can't do it.
Yeah, the TYT, like the MD380, is probably something in between Baofeng and Anytone. I find Anytone is sort of the hot Chinese brand, at least these days.
Well, I guess I tried a couple of digital radios. Anytone seems to be the best one for convenience. It's great that it has a little bit more power, so, you know, it's more people can hear it more so than not. And I like my ICOM ID 31A+. For analog, I can't get the D-Star to work.
That's odd. Any particular reason why? Could it be just a faulty machine, or is it misconfigured?
I don't think it's faulty. I think the problem is I just don't know how to do it.
Oh, okay. I mean, with D-Star, you actually have to register your call sign with some organization. I think it's if you register it with any repeater, the repeater guy who runs it will send your information across to all the other servers and such. So you do have to ID yourself before I think you can access an actual D-Star repeater.
QSO. Yeah, I have that. I have that. I use the ID 31A+ to activate a simplex hotspot, which no longer works. So, you know, I think I have to buy a new simplex hotspot. You know, I know a vendor in China who has a website, and, you know, his particular product is very good because you can get you can get tech support.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's very important. It's playing a little bit of Russian roulette because I knew a guy who bought a product that was manufactured in China, and unfortunately given a Chinese email address to ask for help, and it never quite worked out.
QSO. Yeah, well, this guy, he's a friend of mine on Facebook. Whenever I send him a text, he writes back. But, I think that the duplex hotspot with the dual hat, you know, for two talk groups through Brandmeister, static talk groups, you know. And I use the MD380 and I use the Anytone ATD878UV on that hotspot. And it works great. It works great. I've been using it maybe at least 10 or 12 years. It's been playing off.
Okay, I mean, ultimately, whatever works for you. I mean, some people don't need anything too complicated, so they kind of keep it simple. And others like a little bit more sophistication. You know, I mean, in the old days, you know, you had to stick to the handy talkies that you had if you wanted to bridge a a DMR, you wanted to do that for fusion, you needed a fusion. If you needed D-star reflector, the D-star, you know, nowadays the more sophisticated, i.e. more expensive hotspots, let you cross-band it. So, you know, whatever you want, you can get.
QSL. Yeah, I do like all these products and services that are offered. And, you know, it's good to know, you know, at least to have an idea whether there's quality and value in it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's overkill because people just don't need those services. But if you need them, then they certainly come in very useful.
Well, I think if a person can figure out what it is they want, if they figure out what they want, it's easier to get that. You know, if you go into it and say, I really don't know what I want, you know, how can you even have an idea of what you want, what that is?
Well, I mean, theoretically, one aspect, legitimate aspect, advertising is informing the customer of new feature sets. You know, I mean, everyone isn't globally aware of everything out there. You know, Apple comes up with a new feature, and some people hear about it before anyone else, and others never hear about it. And so, you know, advertising theoretically is a way in which you can learn that there's a new feature set that might be useful for you. You know, just because it never existed before, I mean, it's useful. So sometimes it isn't useful. Sometimes it's a problem in search of, it's a solution in search of a problem. I find technology is different for the last 20, 30 years, but just as often they're actually solutions to a problem that exists.
Well, recently I read an article about Apple and their products, specifically computers and iPhones, you know, that there was a serious flaw in the audio. And I don't know how many percent of distortion was in there. They had to filter it out with software, you know, and now they realize that if they build into the chip a digital to analog converter, you know, they can remove most of that distortion, and it would sound a million times better. You know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I went to the Apple store, and I told them, you guys got to put better DAC in the computer, and they threw me out of the store.
Okay, well, that's an interesting response. I mean, I had that kind of negative effect in computer stores. I remember way, way back, I think it was in the 80s, they were selling the Amiga computer, which I really wanted. But their accessories were kind of bizarre and overpriced. Not really for that era, because the era was clean. They sold a hard drive, which was a big, heavy object, that had an entire capacity, I think, 1 megabyte, and they wanted $2,000 for it. You can't pick up a USB thumb drive for less than, say, about a gigabyte or two. So you can imagine, you know, what I kind of, but it just seemed bizarre, I think, to spend $2,000 for a megabyte. Anyway, so I didn't quite get thrown out of the store, but I was advised to leave. Which is very similar, but yeah, I can understand. But, you know, I mean, Apple, you know, technology is technology, and could didn't do that.
Audio breaking up.
I sent an email to Steve Jobs. I wrote to him. I said,
"Your audio is breaking up."
Not much we can do about breaking up, I'm afraid.
You know, I write to Steve Jobs I don't know how many years ago this was. I write to Steve Jobs and I told him, I have an idea. And he wrote back to me and he said, what is it?
Yeah, sounds like Steve Jobs. He was a kind of obsessive guy.
Yeah, but you're not going to offer me something for my idea?
No, not necessarily. That's another aspect of Steve Jobs. He was not particularly a generous human being.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't fight with him about it. I just didn't tell him what the idea was.
Yeah, I assume he would have thought that that's very likely a result of not getting the money.
Well, you know, I find that when somebody gets an Apple product for the first time, either an iPhone or a computer or something, they think they want to be the smartest person in the whole world.
You can't buy brains. You know, if you got money, if you want to buy yourself a toy, then congratulations. But you know, I don't give people particular points for spending money they have. In some cases, spending money that they don't have.
Yeah, but you know, these products enable all kinds of other problems. Whether, you know, you realize it or not, people accept it and say, well, that's the way it is. But the problems can be so big.
Well, yeah, technology gives and takes. I mean, unfortunately, I repeatedly use this example that a hammer is very useful. You can build a house with one, but you could also cave in your neighbor's skull. So the same thing in the product. You can probably either use it or misuse it.
Sometimes, you know, you wonder who's listening to this conversation.
Now, all manner of different people. I can gaze upon that. Who's on All-Star and who's on Echolink and who's on the audience. And thankfully, it's a busy night.
Well, you know, there's lots of things that your phone can do, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, well, back to Frank. Frank, it looks like no one had experienced the case. I think David suggested, I guess you can Google reviews for it. I have no experience with it. I have my old Valphone UV5, and I think the last time I used it was about 3 years ago. But, you know, it's my emergency radio. Anyway, moving on. David, you had a question or a topic you wanted to discuss?
Yes, I have a question. And this question is, when somebody gives you a so-so audio report on HF, either upper or lower sideband, what could cause this audio problem?
I mean, almost anything. Being off frequency, having RF get into your microphone amplifier, overloading the microphone amplifier, and causing distortion. Lots and lots of different things, unfortunately.
You know, I was looking on the internet for answers to this question. They talk about, like, if it's a radio malfunction, then it would require, what did they say, calibration. And to say, I remember when I had Kenwood Twins, there were two VFOs, one for transmit, one for receive. And so I would know that my transmit frequency is the same as the frequency of operation. Are you there, Roy?
Yeah, I'm there. I'm here.
So if you're talking to someone, the audio is a little bit kind of messed up, you know, if there's a way to tune up or tune down the receiver and leave the transmitter on the frequency of operation.
Yeah, there's been that adjustment for what, 3 years? A clarifier or something? I forget exactly the mechanism they use. But there's settings on most transceivers to shift only the transmitting frequency or the receiving frequency. And, you know, you just dial in the receiving frequency slightly off of your transmitting frequency, and you recover the audio. Usually it's just from the single sideband. If that doesn't have its own built-in carrier, it shifts. That's the frequency of your voice. You either become a bit of a chipmunk or...
KE2FYU, Roy, do you have a copy?
Yeah, George.
All right, your signal is breaking up, and just to let you know, something is going on, but you were talking about RIT, R-I-T.
It's called the clarifier.
RIT, and then, you, of course, you have the IF shift, which can also bring you a few minutes away, but your signal is breaking up big.
RIT and XIT. XIT is a clarifier for transmit.
I'm going to try and reset my little app. I think I got it's over in my is I'll.
Can you hear me, George?
You sound fine.
Yeah, David, you're coming in. I'm working just HF directly into Glen Oaks.
iPhone 15. Thank you.
Correction, not HF, RF. RF directly into Glen Oaks.
No, the reason why
I'm breaking up, I think you might be getting soft. You have to watch out for it. Roy is getting soft.
All right, KD2FYU, let's stand by and let Roy get back in over here.
Yes, please, let me get back. Is it any better now, or is it the same?
Roy, your signal is coming in fine.
Okay, I know. Another one of those weird days with the repeater, so I'm glad that I'm not noisy anymore. I'm sure it'll degrade over time, but hopefully we won't need to reset again.
QSL, you sound much better. You know, RIT and XIT, and the Yaesu product, you know, they use a clarifier, RX clarifier and PX clarifier. So if somebody, you know, is off the operating frequency, they hear you on the operating frequency. If you hear them a little bit off, you can set the clarifier up or down every 10 cycles, 10, 20, 30, 40, etc.
Yeah, I mean, functionally, they're the same thing. It's just labeled differently. Usually it's CB radios and such that tend to get the clarifier label and amateur radio equipment that gives you the initials of RIT and XIT. But functionally, they just shift the frequency of the receiver and the transmitter. You know, that's just how it works.
My Kenwood radio for RIT. And then it had each component had its own VFO.
Okay.
Kilo Echo Hotel Quebec Zulu.
Say again.
Kilo Echo 2 Hotel Quebec Zulu.
What can I do you for?
Just had a comment I've been listening since the beginning. Don't know if you can hear me very well, but you were talking about AI, and I think some of those companies seem to be just trying to sell products to each other now instead of selling a product.
Well, this is an infamous method that was very popular during dot-com. It's a circular sales. Six guys sitting down on a card table and a $50 bill, and they just give the $50 bill to the next guy to the right, around and around a few dozen times, and then they when they write up their books, they say that that's how much money that they made, even though it's the same $50 bill. It's used and abused very often in finances, and AI is a perfect example of it these days. You have NVIDIA basically giving money to the AI model makers, who then give the money back to NVIDIA for the chips, who then rent out the chips to other people, who then get money from NVIDIA, and around it goes. It's basically, they should all be hauled in by the SEC if we had an SEC.
Time will tell, you know, time will tell.
Oh, yeah, there'll be lots of books on this subject. There'll be probably 10 times as many books on this that there was for the dot-com disaster.
WNWR.
Okie doke. So, David, did we answer your question?
Yes, sir. I like my Yazoo HFCB radio.
Okay, well, it's yours. You paid good money for it. You should like it.
QSL. And I guess I just discovered that the other day, you know, how this thing works on a transceiver, you know, and how to say if a person is transmitting off of the operating frequency, you know, then what can they do to bring the transmit frequency back to center?
Well, basically bring it to a technician and have him reset the, it's drifted off of its proper setting, and it needs to be aligned again.
Sure, so. Calibration. I think the word is calibration.
Yep.
Wesley and Dave are related. They're twin brothers.
Thank you, Dr. Roy. And thanks again. Have a great night, KG2RY.
Thank you, David, and thank you for participating tonight. I do appreciate it.
Pleasure's mine.
Okie dokie, next on our lovely little list is Wesley. What do you got for us tonight, Wes?
Yeah. And to make sure, I hope I'm coming good. If not, let me know. AI just created a brand new virus, biological virus. So it's a subject for you. Should we be scared? That was with BBC News. I hope you had a chance to look at your email. Thank you.
Yeah, Wesley, can you kind of bring up the energy a bit? It sounds like you're whispering. You don't want to wake up the cat or something?
Okay, no, I didn't want this to be over-modulated. How is now?
That's fine. Yeah, getting back to your question, there was another one of these scare articles that scientists are building scare thing with AI. Decided that the project is to prank the hell out of the small. What it sounds like, it's not like they just asked the to build some Frankenstein virus. They took a laundry list subunits of genomes, and they fed it into an artificial intelligence, and then they a bunch of information and procedures to cobble them together, and then the science cobbled them together. So they basically told the AI the answer, took the answer that they told the AI to tell them, and built some viruses, and then published it so that they would so a lot of people would know their name. It's a bit of a scam.
Okay, something is taking. You have some problem with breaking up. So part of your actually, we were able. I was able to understand what you're talking. But if you don't mind, and reset it again, it would be good. Back to you.
Okay.
You're breaking up there, Roy. I don't understand a fucking thing you're saying.
Talk about the mirror and say Kilo Echo 2 Hotel, Quebec, Zulu.
Okay, how am I now, Wesley?
Not bad at all. Okay, so, coming back, because part of your, of what you were saying, was lost. So we have a synthetic virus made by AI. And the question was, should we be scared? If you don't mind me, a few words, repeat what you said again.
It's not made by AI. Basically, a bunch of scientists put in a couple of fundamental genomes, and basically set the parameters, and basically told the AI to tell the scientists what they already know, and then the scientists took the output and put it together into a virus. So it's not that AI made a viable virus. It's a bunch of scientists who wanted to get publicity, kind of faked it from the AI. The AI was just an echo. It's the sort of the same thing. You go to Echo, you go to the Echo test, and you tell it the you know, the secret of the universe. To say, well, the Echo Link told me the secret of the universe.
Okay, thank you very much. Grant versus counterpoise. So we have a two description. Grant is direct electrical connection to the earth, providing a low resistance path for electrical currents. But its quality depends on the moisture content, soil type, and temperature. Then we have on the counterpoise, and I'm reading it. It's a network of often elevated wires that serve as a substitute for the ground, especially when proper ground connection is not visible. Counterpoise help complete antenna circuit and provide radiation evidence and so whatever. And I have a problem with that. And for the purpose of the discussion, I decided to challenge it. So my challenging explanation is ground serve as a path and counterpoise serve as a balance. Those two phenomena are unrelated one to each other and are entirely distinct from each other. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same. And matter of every source, what's going on is an unfortunate misinterpretation of the term grounds. We've talked about this endlessly, that unfortunately language is our enemy. Assign different things to the same word and confuse the heck out of everyone. If you sit down, even though I don't particularly thrilled with artificial intelligence, and ask me any artificial intelligence, is a earth ground the same as a counterpoise? The answer will always be no. It's a substitute. It's not the same thing. You're setting up a statement that doesn't actually exist in science. So there is no place that line that says that a ground plane, earth ground is equivalent to a counterpoise. They're not. They can be sort of used they're poor substitute, but that's not the same as they're, as being the same thing.
Okay. I interject, Jane. I agree with that. So, we're talking about a counterpoise, and we have in mind the word balance. One arm of the dipole antenna acts as a counterpoise to the other arm, creating a balance system that allows for effective radiation of the electromagnetic wave. If we're talking about the dipole, then if we talking about a car, monopolar antenna of the car, and the body of the car acting as a counterpoise, it is a balance. From a monopole antenna providing return path of it doesn't matter. It's a balance. It's a balance. But when that car is in the tires are in the water, then the property of that balance changes. And then So yes, we have a balance, and especially when we have a ground plane, actually, before I go to that, I recall the screwdriver antenna. When people have a screwdriver antenna at the rear of the car, and then they have a small resonant circuit between the end connector or whatever connector they use for that antenna and the body of the car, too much impedance and also too much balance in it. And then after I finish, Dr. Ray, you say which part you disagree with, because I'm trying to challenge it. And ground plane antenna. The counterpoise wires are angled downwards to lower the feed point impedance closer to 50 ohms, improving the match to common coaxial feed lines. I believe it's 130, 140 degrees. I'm not sure what is the angle of it. But also, we're talking about the balance. And has nothing to do with the ground, because that ground plane could be 40, 50 feet above the actual ground. But I'm going to risk the statement. At the end of it, I'm going to risk the statement. Every ground could serve, if we really want, as a balance, but not good balance, just as a balance, but ground cannot serve as a balance. Counterpoise cannot serve as a ground, but ground could serve as a counterpoise. Back to you.
Okay. Basically, a ground is a poor substitute, but, I guess a poor substitute is better than no substitute. But a counterpoise or radials or other such are part of a balancing and unbalanced antenna.
Additional thing is, when I was looking at the counterpoise of the vertical antenna, let's say, we have a vertical antenna on the ground, and we have a counterpoise, and we have a wires with no insulation on it, all around. And then, one thing is, for me, kind of interesting. It doesn't matter what is the conductivity of the ground. Is it wet? Is it dry? Is it sand? Is it gravel? Or whatever it is. And whatever is the condition for a given day, the counterpoise gives more steady environment, more steady value as a counterpoise by itself. So if we had only the ground that is used as a counterpoise, it would very much change. But the counterpoise by itself is not changing that much. Back to you.
Okay, I mean, basically, earth ground can have different characteristics. they implemented antenna calculating, you know, plotting devices that are capable of inserting ground conditions. You know, there's a big difference between using broken up granite stones versus sand next to an ocean. So, yeah, ground is much more flexible definition than a actual counterpoise, which is a relatively conducting piece of material. You know, you wouldn't use a semiconductor for your counterpoise. So it's more, you know, it's less variable than earth ground, which can be almost anything.
The next one. Famous face optically encoded. So we have a CNC machine, which the name Exeron, E-X-E-R-O-N. And then we have acoustic lens. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, acoustic lens. And CNC machine was able to manipulate with a piece of acrylic to the point at which when you put to that sort of lens, a light, you saw the picture of Marilyn Monroe. If you don't mind to comment on it, Dr. Roy.
Okay, I mean, once again, this strikes me as an incredibly visual situation, which is not amenable to radios. I mean, basically, it looks like a very distorted lens that focuses light at a certain focal length to reproduce an image. Interesting, nice to watch, probably a little bit less nice to just hear about. You know, I mean, you kind of miss the pretty nature of the video, you know, where the guy puts it into a machine and creates it out of nothing and shows it on the wall. So it's interesting to get to see the YouTube, but to hear us chat about it, I don't know what you're going to get out of it.
The interesting is that that was shown on the YouTube channel of the Titans. The guy from Titans was a former convict. He was in jail for many years, and then after he got out, he decided to pay attention to machinery and metal and CNCs of different kind, and now he's a billionaire. going to the next one, VPN versus proxy. Let me drop. Okay. So we have Russians. They still spend money to lure Western world to Russian spy platforms. And I have some text where I mentioned two platforms. And of course, they could use our AI for their own benefit. So there are two of them is Surfshark and Kaspersky. Surfshark is a European VPN service founded in Lithuania and headquartered in Amsterdam. So it looks like it's not a Russian platform. It's like, it looks like Russian have nothing to do with that. But Lithuania borders with Russia, and many business out there were under Russian influence, to be gentle with words. So we don't know what is the connection. However, Kaspersky has faced allegations of ties to Russian intelligence, leading to the U.S. government banning its software from federal use due to national security concerns. The company has consistently denied those allegations, asserting that it does not assist any government espionage efforts. Well, we know that there are many Russian lies or Russian government lies around, and they don't have a problem with that. But we're talking about VPN versus proxy. So if you don't mind, Dr. Roy, say a few words about the difference and similarities back to you.
Okay. Proxies are rather inexpensive and low-tech. They're simply aliases to different ports. So instead of going through your internet service provider, you're going through a different configuration. It's very easy to trace it, so it's not terribly useful. Virtual private networks, VPNs, are a little bit more sophisticated, esoteric. What you basically are doing is bypassing your internet service provider. You are taking your packet requests, encrypting them in a way that your internet service provider cannot decode, sending it off to a third-party server, the company that's running the VPN, which decrypts it and then establishes the link, the packet link that you want it to. It's not foolproof. Some people think that they could do torrents and not be found out. It's very easy to discover who you are with torrents, and people have gotten all kinds of legal judgment despite having a VPN. It's a nice, inexpensive, simple approach if you happen to want to use your laptop in a cafe with the cafe's wireless access, and you don't want people sniffing your traffic. A VPN is a relatively simple approach to guard against people sniffing your traffic and taking the passwords that aren't encrypted that are going through the Wi-Fi connection without a VPN.
Okay, so we understand that for general privacy, we rather use VPN. For bypassing geo restrictions, we use proxy. Sometimes there is a message saying this video is not allowed in your geographic location or whatever. But that would be VPN, not a proxy. I'm not sure. Secure online banking, definitely VPN, and basic web browsing is proxy. And the question is a router in your network a proxy? Back to you.
Not sure what you mean. There are routers that can be configured to operate a VPN. A lot of times, unfortunately, that's not possible. So you run it on your computer. You can run it on your cell phone. It's a VPN that you hide your geographic location. But that's not foolproof, because a lot of companies that don't want you to use a VPN have the IP addresses of every VPN in the world. So if you are going through a VPN, it can recognize that and disallow the connection because it's a known VPN.
Okay. My suggestion was that if we use Tor-based, T-O-R, Tor-based browser, like Mullard. Somebody didn't hear about that, Mullard. Then nothing is recorded. It's like an onion. So Tor is like an onion. Before somebody would be able to get to the very center of it, it takes too much time. It's too late. True or false? Back to you, Dr. Ryan.
Generally speaking, false. You have to believe these people. They have no particular proof. There are people who suggested that Onion and Tor were originated by the CIA. So you can imagine that they very possibly built a backdoor. It's the same thing with VPNs. VPNs can either record your traffic, even though it's encrypted across the internet, decrypted when it gets to them. So they have the capability of recording every single contact that you made. But, you know, if you read enough of these things, they will tell you, I won't say that it's true, but they'll tell you that they do not record them, or they erase them at the end of each and every day. And so even if they get served papers, they have no record. And then you find out years later that they did have records. So So you're basically taking people at their word. There's no way to kind of prove these things, unfortunately. Only in retrospect.
Thank you very much for that. The darker side of Vevor, V-E-V-O-R, Vevor, and what you need to know. Okay, it is politically incorrect to say Chinese junk. And if you try to make a comment on Amazon about a junk from China, they take it. But you cannot find that comment in the comments. They will say, thank you, so many guys saw it. But you cannot find it. So we may say junk from China. Junk. And all of that would be rejected. You would not be able to see it. I'm not sure how to properly say the phrase that would contain the words China and junk. Could you suggest me some form of it, Dr. Roy?
KG2RY.
Yes, David?
Do the providers of VPN have access to the data you're sending and receiving?
Well, if you do not encrypt it yourself, yes, they have the decryption technology. Anything that you send to a VPN unencrypted, although it becomes encrypted through the VPN software, when it gets to the VPN server, they decode it.
Can the VPN provider hack your data?
If they were malicious, possibly, but unfortunately, for the most part, they'll tell you that they never do that, and it's up to you to prove them wrong.
QSL.
Okay. Anyway, getting back to Vevor, I don't know if most of you people out there know, because these Chinese companies, they come and go. Vevor is a weird Chinese company. They themselves do not manufacture anything. They're a very big company with lots of money, and what they do is they go to companies that are bankrupted and going out of business and have an inventory. They buy up all of the inventory, and they sell it. So, unfortunately, there's no particular quality assurance control. If they've bought up a manufacturer that had good quality assurance, then they have good equipment. If they buy up inventory from a terrible company, they have terrible. So there's nothing really standing behind their name. They're simply a distributor of bankrupt companies, which isn't particularly a good place to be. But they act as the main distributor, and they sell to big box stores all over the United States.
Okay, and they were in 2013 selling in Lowe's and Home Depot and Walmart before they throw them out. They opened up last week a humongous store in Houston, Texas, that would, in design, compete with Home Depot, Walmart, and Lowe's and others. And they are located, of course, in China. And if you don't mind to help me use the proper wording containing words junk and China, that would be not offensive, and that would be just expressing what the person wants to express. Back to you.
I don't know. I would probably find some set of words that suggest that they don't manufacture any of these products, that they're simply sold off from out-of-business companies, and so the innate quality of the merchandise can be very erratic, both for the good or for the bad. And just kind of leave it at that, personally.
Okay, thank you very much for that. So we have a favor present in United States, United Kingdom, Australia, and Germany. And they say they serve 10 million customers globally, focusing on quality of customer service, what kind of quality. If you look at some products that were available in Home Depot, I'm trying not to say the word because I'm not the name of it, because I might be in trouble. But there were yellow color. Then you find exactly the same in Vevor from different kind of companies. It looks like they are buying everything what they can and then trying to sell it to United States and many other countries. But anyhow, is it worth to buy it? Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Well, yeah, that's their business model. There were American companies that did sort of the same, but bankrupt the company's inventories and resold them, and they bought them cheap, but they sold them at a reasonable profit, and the quality issues had nothing particularly to do with that company, because they had not designed it, manufactured, or had any much to do. All that they're out to do is make a profit off of it.
Yeah, what scares me is 50 to 500,000 square feet of the floor with the junk that originates somewhere from out there. I don't know how to be more gentle in words. We have a subject for Paul. Paul, if you don't mind to comment on the event that happened on August 12, 2026. Paul, back to you.
Okay, Wes. Very good. Yeah, well, you're talking about the eclipse. Wasn't much here. I think 10% bite out of the sun. That's all you got. And I missed it because I was visiting a doctor at the time. So there you go. I'll see you next time. You can always wait until the 18th of this month. And like late Thursday night into early Friday morning, 12:02 or so, you'll see a almost total lunar eclipse, not a solar eclipse. So we'll try to look for that. Hope the weather's good. A little over a week from now. Anyway, back to you, Wes.
Okay, could you explain why solar eclipse was not visible in full across the entire region of Europe? Back to you.
Or here, like I said, we saw 10%, So it's the you have to imagine a shadow coming down on the earth, and if the shadow is only a part of that shadow is hitting your area, your city, that's all you're going to see. That part's going to be missing from the sun. The whole shadow is right, completely overhead. Now you got a complete solar eclipse. They said it looked good up in Iceland and North Greenland, and then the way it traversed across the earth wound up in Spain and France, I believe. So I don't know how the weather is with all the fires and everything. Maybe it was too smoky to see. I never did hear the results. Back to you, Wes.
Okay, so I understood that there is a narrow area where total eclipse occurs, and outside of this spot, observers will not see. We see partial eclipse, and that happened mostly in Europe. The last one for today is Asian carp. Yeah, it's a fish. The subject's title is Asian Carps Are Vanishing from Illinois River, Alligator Fish, and Use of Transmitter Injected to Fish Body. So there was a big problem a long time ago. Citizens of Illinois went to China and brought a fish. It was carp. And it happened that the population of that carp was so big that everything was collapsing all around. And they used transmitters injected into fish body. But then we have alligator fish, which is the ancient fish from the era of dinosaurs. That is, the way, if you have any information, would you mind to say a few words and to exit?
Not particularly.
Okay, so I'm going to present the subject. So the government of the state of Illinois thought that the ancient fish that looks like an alligator, but it's a fish, it has a mouth very much similar to the alligator, small alligator, that they would be able to eat enough of those of those carps. But what happened is that they had their mouth is too small, and those carps are quite big when they grow up. So, of course, it was a good that there were so many small carps, and the population was growing for that fish to survive, because it was at the edge of vanishing. But then the problem was still present. If we're talking about that alligator fish, it's a 250-pound fish. It has torpedo-shaped body, a broad alligator-like snout, armored with diamond-shaped ganoid scales, and two rows of sharp teeth in the upper jaw. And eventually, government decided to pay 10 cents per pound in addition to the price for the fishermen. And that helped. But they also used another technique. Two nets. So you have a net from one side, you have a net from the other side, you have a boat in the middle, and you're banging the bottom of that boat with a hammer or whatever, scaring those fishes. They're going towards the net, and then the other net is getting closer. So now it looks like those fishermen found the solution because of the 10 cents per pound, in addition to the price. I'm not sure, because they were using a poison, they were using different techniques, nothing helped. The beginning of the story was that those carps were not intended to be in the Illinois River. But they had a float, and those small ponds, when they had that carp, were flooded, and that's why the fish was able to escape. Any comment? Dr. Roy, back to you.
No, not much.
Okay, so we have a problem solved. It looks like a population of the carp for the first time from the past 4 years is 40% smaller than it used to be, and it looks they find